from Tukito LLC. It's Keto Woman Podcast with Daisy Brackenhall.
Hello, Keto Lovelies. I'm Daisy Brackenhall, and I've spent most of my life struggling with my weight and confidence, and have always had a difficult relationship with food. Even when I finally got to my target weight, after weight loss surgery and eating low carb, I couldn't maintain it and I was miserable. Keto has given me the freedom to fall in love with food again, without the constant gain, loss, guilt, virtue cycle of before. Health and happiness is where it's at now, running on fat. Welcome to the Keto Woman Podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to inspirational women, maybe even the odd man, to discover the secrets to their success so that I can share them with you. So what is keto? Keto is a way of eating that enables you to switch your body's main fuel source from sugar to fat. Who doesn't want to be a fat burner, right? But how do we achieve this? A great place to start is by keeping carbs to 20 grams or less per day. So things like leafy greens and above ground vegetables, plus some nuts and seeds, and the incidental carbs you find in things like dairy. Moderate protein, scale to your lean body mass, and then fat to satiety. Once you're in the swing of things, you can tweak it to suit you. Make your own personalised keto. I'll be asking my guest each week what their keto looks like to show you just how flexible and fabulous this way of eating can be. I'm not a doctor, and most of my guests won't be either, so we can't give you medical advice. It's always best to work with your own doctor because they know you and your medical history and so have access to the bigger picture. This week's extraordinary woman is Kim Gadraj. Kim discovered low carb around 5 years ago after experimenting with various ways of eating, including juice fasts and vegan diets. The fantastic energy levels and disappearance of cravings convinced her that low carb was a lifestyle that could really benefit her health long term. She studied an MSc in international development with a specialization in food security and nutrition in 2014-15 and moved to Bolivia to work with food provision systems and poverty reduction. However, she continued to research her low carb diets passionately. And noticing the lack of good information on low carb in Spanish, she set up a blog to translate information for Spanish-speaking people. In August of 2017, she attended Low Carb USA in San Diego, where Andreas Enveldt mentioned during his presentation that he was looking for someone to launch Diet Doctor in Spanish. She applied for the position, got the job, and in October 2017 made the move to Stockholm, Sweden to take up a position as head of the Spanish Diet Doctor site. She now continues to run the site and also works as an editor and writer on the English site dietdoctor.com. Kim is really happy to now be working full-time on what has been a real passion for several years, helping other people change their lives with low carb too. It was lovely talking to a fellow Brit and hear about all the fantastic things she has achieved so far in her career. What a great asset she is to Diet Doctor. Welcome, Kim, to the Keto Woman Podcast. How are you doing today?
Thanks. I'm doing really good.
We're actually in the same time zone, which is unusual for me recording. I'm usually recording with someone predominantly in the States. So I don't know if you've got sunshine there, but we've got amazing sunshine and high temperatures in France.
I have. I've moved to Sweden now, obviously, but it's really sunny, really long days already. So it's really nice. That feeling of light and spring is here.
Makes a difference, doesn't it? Well, in Sweden, of course, you get those really long days. I mean, how many hours of darkness do you get?
Well, I moved to Stockholm in October to start working at Diet Doctor. So it's quite recent. So all I've had so far really is the autumn and winter. And now we're coming into spring. But I've heard that you literally get 3 or 4 hours of darkness at the height of summer. So yeah. We'll see. Should be really cool.
Yeah. And you get the opposite in the winter, don't you? You don't get many hours of daylight at all.
Yeah, I have to say it's pretty dark.
Yeah.
It's pretty dark and cold as well. It's the first time I've kind of had a whole winter Because in the UK, you get snow every now and again, right? But it's the first time I've had a whole winter where everything's just covered in snow. And yeah, I was a bit frightened in the beginning. I thought, oh no, I'm going to slip every time I went walking in the street. But Sweden handles it really well. They're really good at gritting and there isn't that much disruption on public transport. It's not like in England where everything just grinds to a halt when you get a bit of snow.
I was going to say, everyone just throws their hands up, don't they? And, oh no, what am I going to do?
Can't go to work.
Yeah,
schools are closed.
Countries that are used to it are just adept at knowing what to do. And they're, you know, all their houses are heated properly. But yeah, I mean, I've watched so many Scandi thrillers and you get used to the light in particular, these, you know, these long days or long nights. And it's, yeah, it's difficult to imagine. It must be something actually experiencing that. I must go and do it one day.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this is going to be really interesting because I can already feel how much more energy I have.
Yeah.
Obviously you're getting more vitamin D and everything like that when you have more sunlight. But just the fact that it's daylight for longer and it's daylight when you wake up in the morning just makes such a difference to your energy levels.
Yeah, I bet. It'll be interesting to hear what it's like at the height of summer when there's hardly any darkness if it impacts your sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. Might have trouble sleeping. Yeah.
Especially on keto with all that energy. Yeah. Oh, just keep going all night.
Yeah.
And then actually it'll be a blessing when the winter comes because you probably need that time to hibernate, to recover.
Yeah, maybe.
Anyway, so yes, you've mentioned about working at Diet Doctor now, but let's go back in time to just tell me a bit about, you know, what your life was like before and what led you to go looking for the low-carb lifestyle in the first place.
Well, I actually feel like I'm pretty lucky because I discovered low-carb pretty early on in my early 20s. But before that, I always kind of was just slightly overweight and always having really low energy levels, especially. I really found it difficult to get myself up off the couch and motivate myself to do things. And when I got to university, my first year of university, I was eating really badly. I was eating out of kebab vans. And when I did try to be healthy, I was really focused on having whole grains and having complex carbohydrates and these kind of low glycemic foods with every meal. I can't remember the title of the book, which is maybe a good thing actually, but I had this book on nutrition for exercise. And my dad, when I was still a teenager, my dad ran the London Marathon. And so he was doing all this kind of carb loading and eating complex carbohydrates. And so I also got into running sort of because of him. And so I was really making sure I went for my runs and I was training myself and having my banana before I did my workout.
Making
and
sure like, you carb loaded before that race.
Exactly. And just looking back, it seems so insane. To go to the gym with a bottle of Gatorade and just be sipping on that for your whole workout. I was going to the gym because I wanted to burn body fat, but I was sipping on this sugary sports drink. I was just releasing insulin the whole time and never accessing my fat stores to burn them. So definitely before I would say almost even a different personality. I was a lot lazier, which was a shame because I am very outgoing and I wanted to do all these things, but just that basic physiological motivation to actually get myself up and do stuff, it just wasn't there.
It's an interesting turn of phrase that, because that sounds like quite a judgmental term to use on yourself, you know, lazy. Whereas it's certainly jumping out to me that a term I suppose I would use is lethargic because of what you were eating. But I just find it interesting the terms that we so often use to describe ourselves, it's quite negative and judgmental. You know, you've just set it up there. This is the way I was eating. I thought I was, you know, doing things right, doing things as I was told, being healthy, eating these complex carbohydrates. But I was lazy. Yeah, that I just I just thought that was interesting. It jarred on me when you used that word, because it wouldn't have been how I would have described what you were talking about.
Yeah, that is very interesting. And I think it's really important to point those things out so that we're not placing the blame for these things on the individual. I think what I meant by lazy, which we can definitely switch, is kind of the feeling of physical lethargy, but also just lack of mental motivation to overcome that, you know, and get up and do things. So a kind of mixture of lethargy and lack of motivation definitely is a better way to describe it. Yeah, thanks for that.
Exactly. It's more a case of just wanting to hear you describe it in a different way, because it just, yeah, I wouldn't want you to look at yourself negatively when it sounds like, you know, you were doing everything you thought right.
Yeah, definitely. But that is the way that I would characterize it, this kind of lethargy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest difference I see from now. And it was so incredible to me, I'm jumping ahead again now, but how later, just by reducing carbohydrates and sugars and restabilizing my blood sugar, how this burst of energy just comes back. And it almost feels like a personality change from being somebody who was very sedentary to somebody who I even now need to kind of be careful that I ground myself and have my downtime so that I'm not just jumping up all around the place all the time like an excited monkey wanting to do things. So that was a big change. But it was a whole process, really. I didn't just suddenly jump into a low carb diet. During my second year of university, I really started to read into how you can change your health through food and nutrition. But I definitely feel as though I got onto the wrong track initially. So I was doing all of these juice detox fasts. The first one, I just this 3-day apple and beetroot juice fast, and I can't describe how terrible it was. Just feeling almost faint all the time, and just pushing through, trying to find all this mental motivation to tell myself that I was detoxing and that everything would be fine. And then I experimented with vegan diets for a while.
Because the packaging and the image and the people talking about it has such a pure, healthy glow about it, doesn't it? You know, all these pictures of fruit and vegetables, and it looks so clean. And this must be the way I need to eat.
Definitely. And it's a big discourse in many societies that veganism is the healthiest way to go and also the best for the environment. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I hadn't read much about it. I hadn't read, for example, The Vegetarian Myth by Leah Keith, which I think really puts forward some important points. But for me, I was attracted by this kind of simple fix to save the environment and save my health at the same time. And I went vegan for a while, and I did lose the excess weight that I had, but I was always feeling tired in a different way, just sort of drained. And I was also grumpy all the time. I really had so much trouble with bad moods and bad PMS, and I ended up sort of failing all the time, in inverted commas, you know, on the vegan diet, because I really believe that when we fail on those diets, that means that there's something wrong with the diet. It's not your lack of personal motivation. The way that you choose to nourish yourself as part of your lifestyle needs to be something that's sustainable and that makes you feel healthy, happy, and strong.
This is a great point, actually, because that, again, with the way we tend to judge ourselves, if a diet that we've started doing that is touted in the media and maybe by our friends doing it as well as this amazing new diet, and we do it and, you know, something goes wrong along the way because we feel bad, and automatically what we say is, well, it's us who failed. It's us who, you know, I did it wrong. You know, I messed up. I fell off the wagon, or I did this, or I did that. Nobody really thinks to blame the diet, which is exactly where we should be pointing the blame.
Exactly. It's incredible. And this then also links to the way that we frame obesity in our society. We blame the individual. We don't blame the nutritional guidelines. And at some point, you have to step back and say, what is going on? Because we should never have been at a point where we can't control cravings and we're gaining weight to this excessive point where we can't even function on a daily basis. I don't think an individual would naturally get to that state. So it has to be something to do with the food environment or the food policy. And it's really, really important to get to a state where we can be very kind and forgiving to ourselves. Even on the keto diet, when we fail at keto, again in inverted commas, there are always little road bumps along the way. But, you know, we're seeing more and more now that another big thing that causes high insulin levels is stress. And so there's not very much point also restricting your carbs, lowering your insulin levels, but still then raising them through chronic stress or worrying or doubting yourself or beating yourself up about things. So that's, again, jumping ahead. But one of the most important things that I've realized as a kind of complement to the keto diet is just being very kind to myself and really respecting myself. And once you get to that stage, you are focusing a lot more on nourishing your body out of self-love rather than being strict on yourself and being kind of unkind to yourself and unnecessarily restrictive or rigorous. I think that's...
Exactly. It's a good point to make. And again, I see it so often with people, particularly in my Facebook group, saying, you know, if things aren't going the way they wanted, the way they planned, so, you know, the weight loss isn't going according to this schedule that they've set up, which is, you know, usually based on other people rather than, you know, what it's going to be like for them, or it's based on that first week where, you know, you most people, not everybody, but most people sort of drop a load of water weight, but it's really exciting. And it's, oh, you know, I've dropped 6 pounds in a week. So I'm going to set up this trajectory of what my weight loss is going to look like for the next year. But whatever, when it doesn't go quite according to plan. And the first thing I see, someone will write a post and it'll be, what am I doing wrong? And what am I doing? And usually, what am I doing wrong with what I'm eating? And they're exactly not thinking about just what you said, about all the other things that can impact weight loss in particular. You know, what's your stress like? What's your mood like? What are your relationships like? What is your sleep like? All these things get really underestimated, don't they, with the impact they can have.
Yeah, and this is the other thing I have about setting weight loss goals, because very often you're just kind of putting your finger in the air and exactly. Finding this arbitrary number that you want to reach. And at the end of the day, are you nourishing your body? Do you feel good? Is this a lifestyle that you can maintain long term? Do you feel strong and happy? If those things are all in place, your actual weight shouldn't matter that much. And I have even gained weight recently, partly because I needed to eat more carbohydrates in Bolivia. And I think also partly because I have been maybe eating more fat than is necessary to keep an energy balance. And it's interesting because finding the keto diet was so beneficial to me in so many ways. one of them was just naturally staying very skinny, you know, in within this framework of what society expects. And then I had this weight gain, and I suddenly almost didn't recognize myself so well in the mirror, and I felt a lot bigger. And it was a challenge for me, because I really needed to go through this process of loving my body and feeling great in myself, despite having gained maybe 10 kilos, not just in body fat, but also in muscle. I've also got a lot stronger. But it was super important, and it's done a lot for me to be able to just look at myself in the mirror and give myself love and know in the back of my head that I'm very strong. My mood is great. I have good energy levels. I can do everything I want to do. And the way that I look is great anyway. You know, that's been really, really important for me recently.
Exactly. It's not the top priority. How you look is however you look, and that reflects, like you're saying, all the other things that are more important. And so just by default, you look great. You know, yeah. End of. It's not you look great, only at a certain weight or only at a certain size. You know, although if you are happy and healthy and feel fantastic, then you look fantastic. End of.
Exactly. And any diet can be abused. And if you want to use a ketogenic diet for what's essentially an eating disorder, you can also do that. And I think it's very important to just reassess. We have, as women, we have so much pressure by society to look a certain way. I walked past a store in Stockholm the other day, and it said something like, on the shop window, it said something like, "We know how to rock our curves," or something. And then the models that they were using in the shop window had no curves. And so there's almost a discourse coming through that we're going to appreciate curvy women, but what we're actually practicing is still not respecting it. And I really, really think that this is crucial, to not abuse the keto diet and not use it to manipulate your body out of the size that it will naturally fall into, just by you nourishing it well and feeling good.
Yes, that's another good point. And where I do see people who are determined to get to a certain weight, which is often, you know, what they call that last bit, they often call it vanity weight, actually. So it can be, say, that last 10 pounds or something. But what it becomes obvious they're trying to do is to push past that natural happy weight for them. And that is when, yeah, you do have to manipulate and potentially abuse, you know, the diet that you're using, because you're having to push your body into an unnatural state, or a state that it doesn't want to be in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, just in general, as long as you are well nourished and you have good blood glucose and insulin levels, your skin looks better, your nails are better, your hair looks better, you have this healthy glow, which is so much more important than how many inches you have around your waist, you know, as long as you're at a healthy body weight that doesn't restrict you from your life in any way.
It certainly is in theory, and it certainly should be in practice, but I know so many people still struggle with that, and it would be nice to just gradually shift into that different state of being and a different state of, like you're saying, loving and respecting yourself. So let's go back. When was your light bulb moment? What was it that you read or you saw that took you from the vegan and juice way of eating? You know, I talk to, you know, so many people on the show, and there's usually a book they read or a lecture that they went to. There's something that made it something click in their head? You know, what was it for you?
Well, I have a kind of squiggly route, let's say, into low carb. But what happened was I watched the BBC Horizon documentary with Michael Mosley, Eat Fast and Live Longer.
Right.
And I got really interested in the science behind fasting, and that really made sense to me. So I started on a 5-2 diet, but I still didn't really know much about low carb. So on my fasting days, I was often eating a lot of buckwheat because that allowed me to have a big quantity of food for a low number of calories. I was still looking at calories very specifically and not carbohydrates. But what happened, I was staying with my parents for the weekend and I had done a fast day the day before, and I kind of tried to explain that to my parents, but they weren't really getting it.
Why are you starving yourself?
Yeah, exactly. Why are you starving yourself? And then my dad came down the stairs one morning and found me a morning after a fast day and found me doing this HIIT and strength workout in the living room with his weights. And he was like, oh, my daughter's got an eating disorder. What am I going to do? And he's actually a doctor. He's a vascular specialist. And I just said, okay, just watch the documentary and see what you think. And he watched the documentary. And then he also kind of picked up the ball. And we started what was a really cool kind of like family investigation into this whole thing. So he found Robert Lustig and read his book about sugar. And so then he started criticizing Mike because I was still juice fasting sometimes. I was like, fasting, juice fasting. And my dad was like, are you really still drinking juice? Because look at this about sugar. And then through that, I found other things. Somebody, I think my mum then found Authority Nutrition, which is less lively nowadays. But a few years ago, there was a lot of useful stuff being posted regularly on there. And we just kind of kept researching through things as a family. I ended up going quite strictly low carb and feeling really, really good on it. I was able to do all of my exercise that I wanted to. I lived about 20 kilometers outside of Oxford where I went to university. And I was, to save money, just cycling in every day. So I was doing 20 kilometers each way and just had all this extra energy to do my studies at uni and really feeling good.
Oh, and save time sitting in the traffic. I mean, I used to live near Oxford. I lived in Buckingham, so just up the road. But that, I think it's the A34, isn't it? In and out of Oxford.
Yeah,
I mean, the traffic is insane, isn't it? Trying to get into Oxford. So it's not only great from an exercise perspective, but it's great from a practical getting there a lot faster.
Definitely. And there were really nice cycling routes along the towpath and things to get in.
It's a cycling city, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So you really got into the whole spirit of the university and the bikes. Because you see that, don't you? Outside all the universities, you see the stacks and stacks of bikes parked up from the students.
Yeah, stacks of bikes. And it's really nice. Oxford's a really cool city to be in, cycling around. And I like the summer there as well. There are nice parks where you can hang out in the sunshine.
Yeah, and the river. It's a lovely place. But and that's a lovely story. It's lovely that you know, it was part of your family as a whole that were looking into this and experimenting with it and moving forward with it. Because for so many people, they feel a bit on their own, you know, with their family, with their friends. You know, everyone's looking, you know, what are you doing? What is this keto low carb thing? It all just looks a bit insane. So it must have been lovely to have that real strong unit to work within.
Yeah, I'm really lucky in general with my parents because I can be a bit quirky sometimes and I come back to them with all of these weird new things that I'm doing, but they are always just so open to everything. And in this case, it was great because they didn't just, you know, shut down when I first started with the 5-2 and really started looking into it as well. And now they are both in their early 60s and feeling absolutely fantastic. I remember my dad a few years ago just saying to me, thank you for getting the ball rolling on this because I feel better than I felt when I was in my 20s. And it's just so magical to see them, you know, doing all of their things and really caring for their nutrition as well. It was something that really brought us together, I think, as a family, because we had that then to share together. And my dad now has even, he's in the process of setting up his own, he has a vascular clinic in Somerset, but he's in the process of establishing a metabolic clinic in the same clinic.
Oh, wow, fantastic.
So now we really are kind of getting into the same thing, because I started working with Diet Doctor a few months ago and now he's just setting up his clinic. So we have a lot more things in common, even professionally, that we can be in touch about, which is really nice.
It's really nice also to feel that, yes, you got the benefit from your family being on board, but it's so lovely to feel that you had an impact in their lives, where, you know, you saying your father thanking you for bringing it to him. I mean, that must be a really lovely feeling to know that you've given something back to them too.
Yeah, and just to have really open-minded parents who always want to listen to me and respect also the knowledge that I've gained in my life and have this relationship.
Well, it is respect, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they're respecting the fact and listening to you that they're not automatically assuming that they know better. They're open to the fact that actually you might know better. You might have something new to share with them that is going to change the way they look at things. That's a fantastic synergy. So you mentioned Bolivia. What took you to Bolivia?
It was really wonderful. I've had a very adventurous life so far. I really like traveling. And I finished my undergraduate degree in French and Spanish. And then after that, I went off with my ex-boyfriend. We kind of cycled 3,000 kilometers around Thailand, Laos, and Cambodia. And then we were traveling around for a while. But I started to get the feeling that I was just traveling around without much purpose, you know, and I needed something that was really allowing me to also make a contribution to the world. And I decided to go to Holland and study a master's in international development in Utrecht. And part of that master's, I was specializing in nutrition and food security. I was looking a lot more into poverty reduction, and food security is about making sure that everybody at all times has access to the food that they need to live a healthy and active life. So for my master's research, that's how I ended up in Bolivia. I was working with indigenous groups of traders who are responsible for making sure that food gets from the countryside to the city, because La Paz is a city that's up in the mountains and it's got all of these weird, narrow mountain paths that connect the city to the countryside. There aren't really any big companies that want to invest in that unstable infrastructure. So you've got 90% of the food supply to the city still being controlled by kind of single individual indigenous traders. So that was really interesting. I was kind of involved in nutrition, but working more as an anthropologist, working with these indigenous groups, finding out about the way that they do things, how stable the food supply is to the city, what people are eating.
I was going to ask you, what does their diet look like?
It's really very heavy in carbohydrates. And there is already a big obesity and diabetes problem in Bolivia. What you usually get on a plate of food when you eat is a piece of meat and then rice, potatoes, some plantain. There'll be various types of carbohydrate piled up onto the same plate.
Oh, wow. So a real selection, yeah, of the same thing over and over. So it hasn't always been like that then. I mean, you say there's been a rise in obesity, but has there been then a noticeable shift in what they're eating that has led to that?
This is a big topic that's investigated a lot in international development, especially in poorer countries where you've got the dual problem of undernutrition, starvation, and obesity existing in the same country. That's a huge strain for the health systems of countries that actually have less resources anyway. So there are a lot of people who are looking into it. There's something called the nutrition transition, which is where a country that has a traditional diet transitions to a more Western diet. And I think that is a big part of the problem. When you've got a lot more industrial packaged processed products coming into a diet, you get a lot more processed carbohydrates and a lot more sugar added to everything. So I think that maybe if indigenous Bolivian populations were still out in the fields doing very heavy physical work every day, it would be less of an issue. But what you've also got is a lot of migration to the cities, people being more sedentary. It's difficult, obviously, with anything like this to say exactly what the reasons are, but I would say it's to do with more processed foods and people still consuming big quantities of traditional carbohydrates, even though they're not doing the same amount of physical work anymore.
Exactly. So, yes, it's a lifestyle change, but they're also adding on a lot of this processed stuff as well.
Yeah.
I know Asim Malhotra talks about this with his Piopi diet book. They talk very much about everything that surrounds it. So like you say, their lifestyle, and you know, why these people in this small Italian village, are living so long and so healthily. And they look at the food, but they also look at everything else they do. And they quite often find that, you know, they intermittent fast every day. You know, a lot of them don't have breakfast. And they are out doing manual work and a lot of quite high intensity periods within that as well. And then, you know, when they are eating, they're not huge quantities, and it is very, you know, it is a lot of the food out of the field. So, you know, the fresh vegetables and the meat and the different protein things, they're by the sea, so a lot of fish. And there are carbohydrates, but not too many. But they've got this, the whole lifestyle balance, you know, is what we mentioned towards the start about underestimating the impact of stress and sleep and things, isn't it? You do have to take everything as a whole, not just the diet.
Absolutely. And this is one of the problems with science, how it feels as though it can separate one thing out of the huge complexity that is life in the universe and analyze it and come to a conclusion on it. Because when we even talk about our diet and our health, we're talking about our life and our position in the universe, which is so complex that we may never realize exactly what's going on. I saw this interesting TED talk recently about a woman who was analyzing a study on what are the best factors for having a long life. And she found that even more important than whether or not you smoke, whether or not you have obesity, there were two things that were most important for longevity. The first one was the close connections that you have with other people. Who can you call to take you to the doctor? Who can you call when you're really, really upset and you just need someone to talk to? Those kind of close social connections. But the second one was even just how many social interactions you have during the day, whether you talk to the lady who you always pass when she's walking her dog, or whether you always chat to the man who serves you in the supermarket. So even just social interaction is super important for our health. I'm sure it has a big effect on our stress levels as well. Sleep, like you say, is really important. I'm really getting now into mindfulness and meditation and finding ways to kind of silence this mental chatter, which I think is also very tied to stress. There are so many things. It's so holistic everybody is so different that it's really just about being very kind on yourself, finding the best ways to make yourself feel good.
It's something that, you know, they're doing studies, aren't they? There was a recent big study in the UK looking at loneliness and the impact of it, especially with the elderly seem to suffer the most. And they've done a few experiments, and there was a series on television, I don't know if you watched it, where they took an old people's home community. I'm not exactly sure what it was. It's like a village. It looked fantastic, actually, in the Bristol area. But they brought in nursery age children, a group of children in, and saw how they worked together. So these kids had their nursery set up in this, elderly care home for a period of time. I can't remember how long it was, a few months or something, and they filmed it, and they did tests, psychological tests in particular, but also physical capability tests on the participants at the beginning and at the end. And the changes were incredible on both levels. So people who thought they were, physically didn't have many capabilities at all, so hardly walked, found it difficult to walk any kind of distance at all, were walking long distances. I mean, they ended up having a sports day at the end. And, this lady running in the egg and spoon race, who previously hadn't wanted to get out of her chair. And, this woman, she was Dutch, who was terribly depressed at the beginning. And her mood was far, far better at the end. And that was all to do with the social interaction, particularly with the children. I mean, that was what was so life-giving, and they both benefited. The children benefited from interacting with the elderly and vice versa. But also they ended up talking amongst themselves a lot more, because they were talking about what had happened during the day with these kids who were so fantastic, who came into their lives, or they were grumbling about the noise or whatever it was, but they were interacting, like you say, and that is so important. And I've found what a change it makes to me to have social interactions mostly online, because I live in the middle of nowhere most of my life. My day-to-day life is on my own. But having those interactions online can be the thing that really changes you, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think people are realizing this. It sounds so patronizing, but I think we're seeing this more and more in the material that are coming out from experts, that it's not just diet, it's a whole holistic thing. So we've got, like you say, the Piopi diet. I think Rangan Chatterjee in his latest book talks about those the four pillars. Yes. And then Rob Wolf has got his four keto levers, which are food, sleep, movement, and stress. So we are seeing more and more that the keto diet is just one cog in a whole wheel of machinery that we can use to lower our insulin levels and really approach our health in a much more holistic way.
Yes, there's a book that you would like, I think, which is this, it works on the same principles. It's called The Depression Cure, I believe, by Stephen Ilardi. And he, exactly the same thing. He's obviously taking a perspective of depression and trying to alleviate that. But he talks about the same things. He talks about social interaction, and he talks about how important movement and exercise is for you when you're feeling depressed, and particularly outdoors. And he talks about studies of the benefits of literally just being under the sky and light, like you were saying right at the beginning about the light levels, the impact you feel that is having on you straight away.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can also see at Diet Doctor that we are publishing more and more articles about these holistic ways to look after your health as well. And I have to say that Diet Doctor is a really great place to work along those lines as well.
I was going to say to you, so So how did you score that gig? Because I mean, Diet Doctor holds a special place in many people's hearts, I think, as being one of the first places that they were pointed to go and get that initial information, and then obviously to go on from there with lots of interesting information, articles, lectures, etc. But it is often that place that gets pointed to when someone says, where do I start? I don't know where to start. And I mean, I've posted that link so many times, you know, Diet Doctor. I should be able to remember the link because I've posted it so much, but it's that beginners, you know, LCHF page, whatever it is. It's the beginners page that I was sent to at the start, and I've sent so many people to it. It is a fantastic institution. So, yeah, tell me, what led you to working there?
Well, for me as well, I found Diet Doctor in the early stages when it was just translated into English because it started off as a Swedish site. And so it also had a special place in my heart. And one of the things that I did while I was in Bolivia, I already mentioned the high carbohydrate consumption and the diabetes and obesity problems, was that I set up a blog just trying to explain in Spanish information about cutting carbs and reducing your insulin levels. But if anybody spoke English, I would always still refer them to Diet Doctor. I did translate the blog into English, but I never shared the link. I just shared Diet Doctor because, like you say, I really believe it's the best resource for people who are starting out. I took this kind of nerdy vacation when I still lived in Bolivia, and I went to Low Carb USA in San Diego. And there I met loads of really cool people. It was wonderful to suddenly be in this environment where everybody knew what everybody was doing and could just go beyond that initial having to explain all of the basic things and just go beyond that and really have deep and interesting conversations about things.
Yes, because you do end up wasting so much time, don't you? Because everyone, so what? I don't get it. So you eat all the fat and you don't eat fruit and vegetables, and it's that first sort of 10-minute conversation you have to have with every single person, isn't it? And they still look at you like you're a bit crazy.
Yeah, and it's just cool to be able to get past that basic stuff and just
as soon as you walk in the door
with all the other crazy people as well, which is great. And Andreas Enfeld, who runs Diet Doctor, he was there as one of the speakers, as he often is. But he just mentioned during his talk that he was interested in hiring people. And I was there, I had just wrapped up my research in Bolivia. I had just published a book in Spanish on exactly the topic I was researching. I was going to go back to Bolivia and do the press release and do the book launch and do all of the things related to that. But I was very aware that I was just coming to the end of something in Bolivia. And he really got me thinking during that talk about whether that would be a good idea for me to just suddenly move from Bolivia to Sweden. And I was kind of umming and ahhing it. And at some point, one of the friends I'd made at the conference, he just said to me, just apply. Just go and apply now and then tell Andreas that you've done that in person. So I thought, that's a great idea, actually. I just ran back to my hostel, put together an application, and then just towards the end of the conference, I was able to go to Andreas and tell him in person that I had applied for his job and that I had said that I would be willing to move to Stockholm and that I meant it. I think he remembered vaguely the conversation, but he did pass it on to recruitment, and I went through the recruitment process as normal and had some interviews with Inger, our editor, and Bjarte, the COO, and then eventually with Andreas, and ended up in October of last year just making the move from Bolivia to Sweden to take up the role. I initially started a role running the Spanish site. So Diet Doctor wanted to launch in Spanish, and I speak fluent Spanish as well as being English. So I kind of worked with the IT team and the other members of Team Diet Doctor to get launched in Spanish. And now I continue to run that site, but I'm also doing some editing work on the English site with some of the regular contributors, really trying to get our, we're calling it our evergreen content, the content that people keep coming back to, the guides that people continue to find useful, like the beginner's guide that you mentioned, just getting all of that material really well published. We're really, you should see now, upcoming, we're going to get some really, really good quality guides and other content pushed out that I think is going to be really useful to our users. So that's another really exciting project. I've got my fingers in different pies in the company at the moment, and it's really nice that it's really nice to work at Diet Doctor because everybody has a voice in the company. And we can have all of these different ideas together. Everybody's really focusing on educating people about low carb, making low carb simple, really giving people the tools they need to follow this lifestyle. And it's really cool to work with people who know a lot about the diet, are really well read, really creative, who have loads of good ideas, and we can do this brainstorming and have these wonderful ideas and just run with them. It wasn't like I came into this company right at the bottom and didn't really have a voice. I was really respected and listened to from the very beginning. And I think that's really important. And you can really see Diet Doctor has some different core values. So they are trustworthiness, simplicity, inspiration. And then the core of all of those is goodness. And what they mean by that is how we interact with our users who come onto the site. You know, there's no ads. Everything that you do need to follow the plan is free. There's no industry influence. We're only funded by members who choose to want the optional extra material. But also, you really see it in the way that we are treated as employees of a company. We have a lot of freedom with our working hours, how we want to schedule our time. We're really careful about taking time together as a team to have breaks and really bond as a team. It's really cool. It's a really nice place to work.
It sounds like it. It sounds idyllic. And it really fits in with what you were talking about the holistic approach. I mean, it can really pull you down, can't it? If you get everything right in your personal life, everything's going great. But the place, you know, you spend most of your days in your work environment, if that doesn't function in the same way, it can really disrupt all the good work you're doing elsewhere, can't it? So if your work life, which is so important, just fits the whole ethos of respect, like you were saying, it must just feel like a dream come true.
Yeah, definitely. I just can't believe it sometimes. When I first started, because I had known Diet Doctor for a few years before I started working there. When I first started at the company, I had Andreas's desk right next to me. So I would just be sitting there doing my work and every few minutes just looking over and being like, that's Andreas Enfeld. That's Andreas Enfeld. Luckily I got over that quite quickly, otherwise it probably would have been quite counterproductive.
Maybe he does it on purpose, you know, he puts the new person next to him so they can get that bit over and done with.
Maybe. I mean, I think he put the new person next to him in that case just because to have the extra support, you know, if I had any questions. But it was very, very surreal for me at the beginning to be there working at Diet Doctor. And we've just moved office now. We've got a beautiful office of our own in the center of Stockholm. Beautiful views. It's so cozy, and it has such a good energy. You just get instantly good vibes when you come into that office. And I've had jobs before where I get that Monday feeling, you know, of like, oh, I've got to go into work. I have never one single day had that now in my job. It's always just a pleasure to go into the office and be with the other team members. And yeah.
It just goes to show though, doesn't it? That when a company sets itself up that way and operates that way, that actually, the end result from a bottom line point of view is that they get the maximum out of their staff. You know, the people working there want to be there, are very productive, are very happy, and, you know, their work output compared to places where they're not treated well and they're not happy. I mean, surely it's a no-brainer.
Absolutely. And also just that general feeling that you are doing something every day that really means something, and you are really doing something that's helping so many people. We get good feedback from people who use Diet Doctor of how it's changed their lives and their success stories and things like that. And so you just get this constant affirmation that you really are doing something to help change people's lives. And to have that feeling that you're doing something meaningful every day also really helps with that. And I really, before I started working at Diet Doctor, I really did appreciate, you know, some sites you go onto and you get pop-up banners and people selling products, and it's very unbiased, and it really is just focused on an objective view of what is the science and how people can use it to implement a holistic lifestyle of well-being into their lives. It's really cool.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's one of those rare institutions that you don't ever hear anything negative about it. I don't think I've ever heard negative comments. It's usually, it's always positive, but it's usually actually the complete opposite. It's people have this real fondness for it because it was quite often where they started. So they do hold it quite dear, which must be a lovely feeling for you to, you know, when you're working in somewhere like that, to know that it's really deeply meaningful for people. It's not just some site. It holds a lot of importance.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really cool. I started in October a few months ago. It seems like forever already that I've been working there, but I also still have this feeling of, I just can't believe how lucky I am to have got the job and started working there. So,
and you get to travel. We were talking earlier about going to conferences. You're going to be at the London conference in May.
Yeah, most of the team is going on the low carb cruise. So anybody who is going on the cruise will be able to meet lots of members of Team Diet Doctor there. But there's also the Public Health Collaboration Conference in London at the same time. So two of us have decided to stay behind and go there because there are really some fantastic speakers.
It's a fantastic lineup, isn't it? I'm really looking forward to it.
And I was really grateful in Breckenridge. I was allowed to run an interview with Ben Bickman that people can see on our members area if they want to. And so I think I'm going to be able to also run some more interviews while we're in London. And if I do get the chance to interview Tim Noakes, that's going to be another
Godfather.
Test of my being starstruck. Godfather of low carb. Yeah. I know he's
no
such
pressure.
No, exactly. And he's such a wonderful person. You can tell that he's very kind. Just looking at any picture or video of him, you can see that he's just fundamentally a very, very good person. So I'm not worried about anything in his personality. I'm just more worried about myself getting all starstruck and nervous and freezing up. Exactly.
Tripping over yourself. Yeah. I know the feeling. Well, I look forward to meeting you in person there in a few weeks. It's not far off now at all, is it? And it's been fantastic talking to you today, and it's been crammed full of information and lots of links which we'll put in the show notes, because I think there are quite a few things that we've mentioned that people all like to go off and explore further. But perhaps we could round up with a top tip from you to the listeners.
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about this. I'm glad you gave me a heads up about there being going to be a top tip. I think mine really goes back to this issue of body image. Because, I mean, this is a podcast specifically for women, and we really do have so much pressure from society about body image, and we can be so nasty to ourselves about the way that we look. And it's just so counterproductive for our well-being in so many ways. And so I think my top tip is to just be kind to yourself. And when you look at yourself in the mirror, just give yourself a lot of love and tell yourself how beautiful you are. And just trust that when you're looking after your diet, you're looking after your health, and you have a lifestyle that you can feel that you can sustain in the long term, that's what's important. And anything about the way that you look in a size way is it really is secondary.
Lovely. That doesn't surprise me at all, that coming from you, because it really fits everything you've said, and you know, the way you come across. It's lovely to hear. Thank you so much for talking to me today, Kim.
Thank you so much.
To get the resources and links from the show, please go to ketowomanpodcast.com. Are you my next extraordinary woman? Maybe you've got an idea for a show, a topic you want to hear about. Let me know how I can tickle your earbuds by dropping me a line at daisy@ketowomanpodcast.com. If you fancy joining me on this exciting adventure and want to help me create new episodes, please go to my Patreon page at patreon.com/ketowoman, or simply hit the support button on the Keto Woman podcast website. It's thanks to the Two Keto Dudes that I'm hosting this podcast, so please consider heading to their Patreon page at patreon.2keto.com and help them bring you more podcasts like this one. Please help other people hear about and find this podcast by reviewing the show on iTunes and Facebook. Every star and review really does help. It doesn't go unnoticed by me, the people who regularly like, share and comment on my posts. Your support means the world to me. Thank you. This week's end quote is from Mary Ann Radmacher. I am not the same, having seen the moonshine on the other side of the world. Bye-bye, keto lovelies.